Chants of "Build the Wall" were a common occurrence on President Trump's campaign trail, and his efforts to find the $5 million in federal funding to complete the project will likely be front and center when funding debates kick off this fall. But a new report from the ACLU's Border Rights Center, the Center for Biological Diversity, and the Sierra Club highlights what they call the real impact of this proposed wall, from environmental devastation to its inability to stop human or drug trafficking. The report urges Congress not to waste more taxpayer money on something they say is harmful. Astrid Dominguez is the director of the ACLU Border Rights Center.
We see the wall as something that's going to stop people from coming, and that hasn't been the case in the past decade when walls have already been in place.
She says there is a humanitarian crisis on the border that the walls that are already in place have created.
This was an intention to funnel people through the most dangerous areas with the idea that it would deter them. It would actually make them think twice and not cross. But that didn't really happen. We continue to funnel people through the most dangerous areas. And now we have thousands of people that have died.
The report also outlines the devastating environmental effects they say will come with building more physical barriers along the border. And on top of that, Dominguez says the portions of the border wall that have already been built have had an effect on the border communities that they divide. But she says despite the militarization they've experienced in those communities, they are not what you think.
Border communities are among the safest in our country. It's not like what they often talk about, you know, as this like war zone. We're not.
And according to Dominguez, border crossings are at a near historic low, and border walls do not address the new wave of immigrants we're seeing arrive here.
The people that are arriving at our borders are asylum seekers, are people who are not cutting through the walls, cutting through the fences, making holes or anything like that. And these are people that are looking for the Border Patrol agents to surrender themselves to them. These are in no way people that are trying to evade arrest.
And that is one of the things that our next guest says is one of the most underreported changes we've seen in recent decades at the U.S.-Mexico border.
One of the biggest, probably underreported changes that we have seen in the last decade to what's happening at the U.S.-Mexico border is that the majority of people trying to come to the United States across that border are not Mexican. They are coming from Central America. We have the highest number of families and unaccompanied children than we've ever seen. A full 40% of the people arriving at the border are asking for asylum. They're not necessarily trying to evade apprehension. They're asking to come in the United States and obtain our protection.
Teresa Cardinal Brown is the Bipartisan Policy Center's Director of Immigration and Cross-Border Policy. She has served as a policy advisor for U.S. Customs and Border Protection and was also director of the Immigration Legislation Task Force in the Department of Homeland Security. She says this new wave of immigrants is one reason we need to think of border security in a more holistic way, looking at everything from physical barriers in some areas to what's driving immigration and how our immigration courts function. But Brown says, first, we need to know more about how effective things like the existing 700 miles of fencing along the border have already been.
So, of course, DHS, Customs and Border Protection, look at the wall in terms of how does it affect our ability to deter or detect and interdict people and or goods flowing across the border that shouldn't be. But they don't have great ways of measuring that all the time, and they haven't done a great job in the Government Accountability Office has pinged them on this, of figuring out how they measure that so they could really determine, well, has the wall been effective and how much has it been effective and what has it done in the places where we've had walls or fences. So that's sort of one set of measurements, is how are we measuring what it's aimed to do. And then I think there's a second set of things that more and more people are asking the government to look at, and that is, what is the impact on the surrounding communities? What is the impact on the overall flow of migration? Does it mean that we're just moving migration to different parts of the border from where we have barriers and bollards? And given the business model of the cartels, if you will, if we're talking about interdicting drugs, does it work when they're also investing in tunnels and drones and submersibles that go around, over, and under the wall, right? So, you know, I think that's one of the major reasons why we continue to have a lot of this debate, is because we don't even have agreement on what should we be measuring to see whether or not the wall is actually effective and what it's trying to do.
What do you think we should be measuring? Can you look at things like Border Patrol apprehension numbers and things like that in terms of apprehending either migrants coming across the border illegally or also drugs to try to determine whether or not the walls that are there already have been helpful?
Yes, that's one of the measures that the government is already looking at. As a matter of fact, apprehensions and interdictions are their primary measurement of what's going on at the border, but they have limited functionality. To give you an example, they only measure what the government sees and catches coming across the border. It does not do anything to measure what they don't catch, what they see and don't catch, for example, or what they don't even see. And so it's a limited measure in that, for example, governments of both parties have claimed that when apprehensions go up, we're doing a better job of catching people. And when apprehensions go down, we're deterring more people, which means no matter which way that number goes, we're doing a good job. That's
right.
Not a good measurement. That's not something that's going to be particularly helpful. The only way you can say whether or not you're doing a good job is if you also know how much you're not getting.
Right.
And that's the piece of the measurement that's been missing. And there's been a lot of debate about how you estimate that. And the government has been, you know, I think skeptical of trying to do that, in part because it may indicate that what they think they've been effective at hasn't been as effective as they thought it was. Though that there's a lot more people that are trying to say, well, it's not just about whether or not that's effective. I mean, that's an important measure. Are we spending our money wisely? But is it the right way to do it? Is it the best way to do it? Are there other things that we could do that would be better and not have corollary impacts, say, on the environment or on the community or other things like that? There's been a lot of talk about could we use more technology? Technology that has been deployed has been successful. There have been great cases of, you know, the virtual wall, if you will, that never got built. And that's because maybe we can't rely on technology to do everything. You need all of the above, right? You need some barriers in places. You need technology. You need people on the ground to be able to respond when something happens. So it's not just one thing.
Right. So when you look at that all of the above approach and you talk about barriers as well as quote unquote boots on the ground that you hear a lot about, as well as technology, do you think that the idea of building one continuous wall is something that is, one, plausible because of just the physical landscape there, and also effective? Or is it better to target the places where you would put up a physical barrier?
I have not spoken to anyone whose job it is to enforce and manage the border who thinks that a Brownsville to San Diego border wall will ever be built. And that's not to say that it's impossible, because, of course, you could do that. It would probably cost an awful lot of money and be engineering very difficult. And there are places where you have to deal with natural barriers, and you probably have to waive a lot of environmental laws in places and take land from people who have land along the border. I mean, it would be very difficult. It could be done. The question is not whether or not it could but whether it will. And I think given all those other things and the fact that there are other ways that we could look at enforcing the border that could help us that aren't the wall, I think it's difficult to think that we'll actually get that.
Yeah.
I think the investments that we need to make have to be looked at, you know, section by section. What's happening in a particular sector? What does the environment look like? There was a famous saying when I was at Customs and Border Protection that when you've seen one part of the border, you've seen one part of the border. That it's literally not the same. And each of those geographies have a different pattern of migration, have different methods that are used, or, you know, for migration or for smuggling. You have different criminal groups that control different parts of the border that have different operational agendas. So you have to deal with them sort of each on its own to figure out what's the right combination of stuff that would allow us to control what's happening on that part of the border to the extent we can.
All right. Teresa Cardinal Brown is the Bipartisan Policy Center's Director of Immigration and Cross-Border Policy. Teresa, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.